The Middle Ground Podcast with Gabriel Thatcher.
Can I make this thing go off a periscope? Let's try periscope.
Take a seat right over there, sat on the stairs, stay or leave. The cabinets are bare, and I'm unaware of just how we got into this mess. Got so aggressive, I know we met our good intentions. So pull me closer, why don't you pull me close? Why don't you come on over? I can't just let you go. Oh, baby. Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. Cops are still running, dishes are broken. How did we get into this mess? Got so aggressive. I know we met all good intentions. So pull me closer. Why don't you pull?
Hey, it's 9 a.m. on Friday. Today's the first day of early voting. And so you get to go to the polls today. Vote, which is kind of exciting. We got a lot to vote for. Especially if you're a Republican, but hey, even if you're a Democrat now, there's plenty to vote for. Unfortunately, in Tennessee, they don't let libertarians on the ballot, so we don't have anything to vote for today, except for in the city general, the city council race. Earlier this week, I was in attendance with Nancy Rainier. Met Nancy. She's a really sweet lady for sure. She's served on the school board, and so a sharp lady as well. Taught for like many years and stuff like that. So that was great. And let's see what else. I met Terry Schneider for the first time. I couldn't really figure out with Terry, like what, why she was running. I tried to like pry into it. Hey guys. Hey Aaron. Hey Phil. Hey David. Already voted. Yeah. Right. Were you first in line, Phil? That's 9 o'clock on Friday, man. That's pretty impressive. Care to share who you voted for governor? We'll see if he chimes in on that. Let's see. So I met Terry. I think her first run-in with the city council was over signs because she's a sign lady. And so I think that the reason that she's running probably has to do with having to deal with the city in that measure. So if she gets elected, I expect her to be business friendly. I would hope. And so, let's see. And then, Sean Wright came out and, he was red meat for, it was a libertarian meeting. And so Sean, tossed out the red meat to my guys. Guys and gals, especially on like red light cameras and things of that nature. And so, the people I felt sorry for was like my wife was in attendance at a libertarian party. And at the end, after I let the candidate speak, I then opened it up to the crowd, which really, as a chairman of the Libertarian Party, I know better than to turn it over to the crowd. But it did, and it wasn't that bad. But, the things that we care about are privacy and following the Constitution to a T and things of that nature a lot of other people aren't so passionate about. And don't see the reason for our passion. I think that's the disconnect between libertarians and most people, is that we are passionate and very, very aware of where the government is not following the rules, just like the government is very aware of where when we don't follow the rules. But anyway, that was interesting to open it up to the crowd. Let's see. And then they also talked about, which was interesting, there was a couple people that had lived in Europe, and in Europe they use a lot of roundabouts, and they were talking about how we could save the city a lot of money by using roundabouts. I thought that was interesting. And so there was a great turnout. I mean, we packed that room at Coconut Bay Cafe, and, you know, good turnout, lots of that. So, but let's see, what else we're going to talk about? Oh, so Ronnie Martin gave me a call yesterday, which was great. I think that he's got to be the front runner right now. If I was laying odds, you know, he's even money as far as winning. My picks are definitely, I think that Ronnie will win. I think Rick LaLance will win. And then the third spot, I don't know. It's a toss-up. That's the real guess. If I had to bet money on it, I'd probably lay it on Sean Wright, you know, because he's from here. The other can't, and then if Nancy Rainier gained money, so maybe she'll be frugal with our money when she gets if she gets elected. So, for the NATO, he called out Angela Merkel. Evidently, he called out Theresa May, who is the leader of Great Britain, and did it through the press, which is I don't know, probably, you know, there's part of me, it's like maybe he was maybe he's doing that on purpose because he met with her, they had a great meeting, is what everyone thought, and then he met with a tabloid newspaper over there, and then he wrote, of no confidence going to come up for you. You've lost two of your cabinet members. How about this? How about I go out and I shoot you down? And if I shoot you down, then all these people, I don't underestimate the guy. Whereas another thing I wanted to talk about was earlier this week on Facebook, I got into it. I believe the guy's a Democrat because he hates Trump, but evidently he's confused about how tariffs work. And so, tariffs are what Trump has placed on lots and lots of Chinese goods. Even with the raise in tariffs that we have, we're nowhere near what Smoot-Hawley did in the early 1930s, just so you guys know. Like, everybody is scared to death. I've even got economists telling me that they're really worried about where consumer sentiment is going and that this could be a really ugly fall. We could be slipping into a recession. I'm still trusting the Trump administration. He's got some really smart guys there that are in his cabinet that I trust a lot, like Larry Kudlow. And then what's the other guy that I like so much? His name has slipped my mind now. But, you know, I think that he's got really smart people around him. And so I'm still giving him some rope on these ideas about tariffs. Although in my class that I'm teaching right now at Motlow Economics, I explained how tariffs work, and tariffs are not good for free markets. They just really aren't. The reason they are not good for free markets is because they raise the price of goods coming in. So Trump places tariffs on China steel, right? That raises the price of China steel. U.S. competitors, if they are able to raise their price to the price of Chinese steel, they will raise their price to Chinese steel prices. And so they will make abnormal amounts of profits. The real issue is that it's the consumer that pays this tax. It's not China that's paying the tax. It's the consumer that pays the tax. And so our goods are going out, and in retaliation, these foreign governments are raising the tariffs that they already had on our goods. So, for instance, Europe is raising the tariff on bourbon from Kentucky. And I was telling people on Facebook that this is good news for us in the United States. And sit tight while I explain that to you why that is. So currently we send a whole bunch of bourbon to Europe because it's one of the best drinks you can have. There's water, there's tea, and then there's bourbon, basically. And you could live on those things. Oh, got to add milk. So add milk in there and then you're covered. Maybe some red wine. I'll let that slip in there too. But all right, so bourbon is definitely in the top five, no doubt. We don't need bourbon. And so therefore we will buy something, an alternative. Maybe scotch or something along those lines, Tennessee whiskey, who knows? So they will make a switch. Therefore, the demand for bourbon in Europe is going to go down, right? And so what that does, that means the producers of bourbon will have more bourbon than they normally do. That means they'll have to lower prices here for us, prices will fall in the U.S. It will get cheaper bourbon because the Europeans have raised the tariff on it. Same thing with the soybeans. We've got soybeans that we send over to China. You know, we're the breadbasket of the world. We always have been, we always will be, unless these tariffs get in the way. But then I still think that we will, because we produce more food than anyone else. We produce way more food. And so we sell our surplus off to other people. But China, in retaliation, has decided to buy soybeans from Russia instead of U.S. soybeans. And so because they have placed a tariff on U.S. soybeans, which has made the prices of U.S. soybeans to go higher than the price of Russian soybeans. Fair enough, right? So what that means is that U.S. suppliers of soybeans will no longer sell their quantity that they have been selling to China. That means that there are more here. When you increase the quantity, whether it be bourbon or soybeans, and the demand stays the same, the price will fall. And so I expect prices to fall for food, because if soybeans are cheaper here, you're going to see cheaper food prices. You know, it takes a little while for farmers to change, right? This has been a snap judgment by the Trump administration. It takes a while to plant soybeans, to grow them, then to harvest them. So it'll take a little while for them to adjust their numbers for the price, the quantity to come back into line. So we're going to have a surplus of soybeans, means cheaper prices. We're going to have a surplus of bourbon, that means cheaper prices. And so that's a good thing. On the bad side is that it means that Europe will no longer be drinking our bourbon, thinking that we're wonderful in Kentucky, which people in Kentucky are. And they'll no longer, in China, will not be eating our soybeans, thinking that we're wonderful in our breadbasket area of the country, wherever we grow soybeans, which we are. Messed up the world is already. Do we really need to add fuel to that fire? I don't think so. And so that's my real worry. Let's see. Anything else we want to talk about? Governor race. It seems to be heated between three people. You've got Randy Boyd, Bill Lee, and Diane Black. That's the front three. My pick, although I'm not a Republican, would have been probably Harwell. And even her, I've got some reservations on, but I do like how she feels about medicinal marijuana and things of that nature. I think that she has the most in that area. But I do worry about her raising taxes and stuff, because she raised my gas tax. So anyway, that's the governor's race. Today starts early voting in Tennessee. So if you have time today, go vote. Let's get some people elected, get some good leaders elected. To all the people running out there, I mean, we've got school board candidates, we've got city council candidates, we've got races all over, even right down to county mayor. I saw Bill Ketron last night, and I think he'll make a great county mayor. I do worry about what property taxes are going to do under his leadership. That'll be interesting to see. Normally, he's not a proponent of raising taxes, but he was for the gas tax. And so that makes me question it. And anyway, that's how that goes. Hey guys, over on Periscope, I see you over there. So let's see, anything else we're going to talk about? I think that's about it. If none of you guys want to chime in, that's fine. That's cool. You can always email me. You can email me. Let's see, which email should I have you send stuff to? Let's just use my work email. It's realestate@mt615.com. And you can always send me a Facebook message at Answer Fancher or at my Gabriel Fancher. There's lots of ways to get in touch with me. Those of you on Periscope, you're using Twitter, which isn't crashing on you. And so therefore, use Twitter at answerfancher.com, your answer fancher period, and you're welcome to no period, but answer fancher. Welcome to send me some questions, send me some things you want to hear about. If there's any basic economic questions you want to talk about, I'll tell you how I would teach it in class and try to explain it to you. I hope you learned a little bit about tariffs. Tariffs are bad. They're just bad, right? And so they're like raising taxes on the people, and I'm never for raising taxes, ever. And so if other countries want to raise tariffs, I'm fine with it. They want to tax their people, so be it. I want America to be free. I want everything to come in here and go freely. That includes all forms of capital, all forms of people. I do. I'd like to check it at the border. I wish we had turnstiles. You come through, here's your name, you're here to work, great, awesome, move on through, right? And then you're welcome to go back across when you get done, is kind of my feeling on it. Because as far as immigration goes, I think most people that come here, they would rather stay in their home country. They just want to come here and work and make a living, and that's fine by me. I just don't want our safety net to become a hammock for people, and that's my real concern. And I think that's the real issue, that if you really dig down on why people are against immigration, I think that's what it is. They feel like people are getting unfair advantages, and they aren't getting them. And so nobody likes to be hard at work and see somebody sleeping on a hammock, unless you're the one sleeping on the hammock. And so there you go. Anything else? No? All right. Well, like I said, this is the Answer Fancher. I'm going to run this on the Middle Ground podcast. One last thing. Almost forgot. I met with Mike Sparks, and I'll have that interview on at the end of this this bit. We'll tack on the Mike Sparks onto the podcast. Mike is a really good guy. He's in a tough race right now. That Smyrna district, it's mostly Smyrna, but it also touches down into Murfreesboro, handle, and up into Laverne. Look, this district was drawn for Mike Sparks, no doubt. In my mind, it was drawn for him because when he got elected, the Republicans also got the pin. And so before Mike could upset anybody, they drew the district, and it's perfectly drawn for Mike Sparks. And that's great because he does a good job representing those people. The candidate against him is Tim Morrill in the Republican nominee process. And Tim is a really great guy, has done great things for the city council in Smyrna, great things for the city of Smyrna. And I'm getting a call. He's lucky I don't take that live. So Tim Morrill's done great things, but Tim Morrill turned me down for an invite on my podcast. And so I'm brokenhearted a little bit. I don't know if he didn't like that I had Mike on first or what, but I actually sent Tim the invite first. So anyway, that is that's how it goes. So I think I sent him the invite first. Anyway, I wish them both best of luck. It'll be interesting to see. Get out and vote. And, the comments that I have received against Mike is that he hasn't done much while being elected, and that he likes to pontificate about issues that are important to him and to people that he sees hurting. And so, some people say that Mike should be a minister. They'd be very good at it. I agree, no doubt. But I also think that there's room for him in the state house, because he does take on issues of government and passing laws that really don't mean that much in the grand scheme of things. Like, Tennessee is very good at passing things that if the federal government changes their mind on, like abortion, like immigration, like gun control, our laws, our rules won't matter anymore. And so anyway, it's very disappointing. I think a lot of times they do that to November, because I am on the ballot running for governor. And so that'll be fun to talk about. And we'll as we go along, we'll hash out what would a libertarian governorship look like. And I've got a great example in Gary Johnson, even though Gary Johnson, big proponent of weed, and I think it's taken a few of his brain cells away at times. But he did a great job as governor. And so it'll be interesting to compare and contrast him to other governors that we have had here in Tennessee. So look forward to that. Look forward to talking more about tariffs. Look forward to hearing from you guys again at Answer Fancher. Comment. If you're watching this as a replay, or if you're listening to the podcast, then thank you very much. Thanks for the likes. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you guys next week, if not sooner. Okay, great. Have a good week. Have a great weekend. Be safe out there. Love you, Facebook. Love you, Periscope. Love you, YouTube. Later. All right. Make sure, yep, we got a live button up there, so we're good. All right. Hey, everybody. This is my friend Mike Sparks. He's running for office. And what I wanted to do was bring him on, introduce him to you guys. He's in a tough race right now. I think it's tough. I don't know. I haven't looked at the polling numbers. Maybe Mike knows him. We'll ask him in a second. But I wanted to introduce him because it is a tough race. It's an important race. What I think's interesting about your race is the district. How it stretches out. I mean, you've got parts of Murfreesboro, parts of Smyrna, and I believe even parts of Laverne.
I've got a lot of Laverne too.
Yeah. So when you think about Rutherford County, I mean, Mike's got to have his finger on the pulse for a lot of different areas. Yeah. So, Mike, my first question that I like to ask is, what do you do for a living?
Well, my background is a little multifaceted. Coming out of high school, I worked at Whirlpool factory, went to college at night, but it was difficult. Started my first business at 21. I had a fitness center.
Okay.
And I saved 10 grand at that time, and I my dad loaned me $10,000.
Okay, what year was this?
That was, man, this was 1989.
Okay, so $10,000 is a lot of money.
It was a lot of money. And I had saved that. I was kind
still
of
proud. Is.
Yes, because I was just, you know, I was always speculating, buying and selling, you know, buying and selling cars, motorcycles, boats at the time. And I saved that money, and I paid my dad back. I had the business for a couple of years.
Okay.
Next thing you know, I was getting married, and I had a child on the way, and then I was buying my first home at 22.
Wow.
And it was really challenging.
You grew up fast.
Well, I did. And it was great experience. But the problem that I had to manage being, you know, being married at 22 and then having two kids, you know, another one on the way after that.
Wow.
And then I had a business. And then I was working 40 hours a week.
Woo.
So I had to choose between being married and two kids or my business and full-time job. So, you know, naturally I chose the wife after 29 years, thank God.
She is beautiful.
She is. And she stood by me through all these years because politics isn't easy.
No.
It's not easy for your spouse.
Sure.
But, you know, then I went to work for Coca-Cola, done sales for Coca-Cola.
Okay.
And one of the things I was kind of proud of at Coca-Cola, I probably had the most efficient route. I was probably the fastest guy they had. But, you know, in working in the factory and working, you're in a fast-paced environment, and that's why I'm probably as quick as I am now. And I'm always looking for efficiencies. Like just now I called you.
Yeah.
What's the fastest way to get to you?
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't want to go a mile out of the way. So I'm always trying to streamline things. And I think I bring that to the table in the General Assembly. Because when I see waste of taxpayers' money, and I see waste, believe me, I see a lot of waste. Then I try to do what I can to try to stop it. But then I went to work for Nissan. Nissan was good to me. And
okay.
I did. It was good to me. But I tell you.
How long did you work at Nissan?
Worked there 8 years.
8 years. Okay.
And I can tell you, Gabriel, I prayed. Literally, I prayed probably every day to leave the factory.
Oh,
I prayed every day.
Yeah.
But I was trying to go to college. I was working nights. I was trying to go to tissue. And it
still
was
raising a family.
Yeah, still raising a family. I had a jet ski rental business on the side.
Okay.
Later, in my late 20s. And working in the factory, it was difficult to try to go to school.
Sure.
Because if anybody's ever worked night shift, it's challenging. You know, it was really challenging. Then I went to day shift, and then I started my own business. I wanted to start a car business. And one thing that I know I sound like Al Gore when I say this, but I probably sold the first car on the internet back in the 90s.
Wow.
Now, no one could ever disprove me. But it was a red Jaguar. It was a 93 red Jaguar XJS convertible. And a dealer had it for a year, and I wanted to take my wife to her high school reunion. And he had it for a year, and I remember his son, who used to come to my gym, and you know how guys are when you're young in your 20s, they're kind of cutting up all the time.
Sure.
Like, you can't sell a car. He said, we can't sell. We've had it a year. And I tell you, I've got a strong religious faith, and I prayed over that car. I laid hands on that car, and I borrowed 18 grand from the bank, and paid 18 grand for that car, and I sold it in 19 days. And,
wow.
And I thought, what is that dealer not doing right? He was a sharp dealer. He was probably the sharpest guy in Rutherford County. And I thought, you know, he's just, Smyrna's not the marketplace to sell this car.
Not, of course not.
New.
Right.
And I sold to an executive out of I think it was Massachusetts. And I met him in North Carolina. And I drove out there with my sister, Vicky. She rode out there with me. We dropped the car off and we rented a car back to come back. And you've probably seen where my sister is falling and hit her head. She's been in a coma for about 6 months, and she's awake now, but she's still, it's like dealing with a 5-year-old, which I know it's another issue.
Right.
But my sister, every time, like I've done a couple of speculative deals. I drove to Wyoming 2 years ago on a deal that I'd done, and that was very stepping out driving to Wyoming, and it was probably the best deal I ever done, pound for pound.
Wow.
But the Business Journal featured that because my car business was the first .com car company in the state of Tennessee.
Okay.
Take a domain name and use it.
Okay.
And the state of Tennessee had told me, they said, you can't do that. And I said, why can't I? And they said, because it's never been done before. And that's what they'll tell you.
Sure.
So I said, well, that's not a reason to stop me. And so we did it. And we were selling a lot of cars on the internet, and we were using video and that sort of thing. Before, pretty much, other dealers were even using video and advertising. But the car business, you know, it's a very tiring business. It is very demanding. Cash for Clunkers really took good cars off the road. Another government scheme.
Sure.
Another reason I get upset with government is because of the schemes I see sometimes. And I really prayed about that car business that I wanted to get it sold. And I sold it after 12 years. And I done really good on the real estate.
Okay.
I had another business next door, and Spoonleaf's Hair Salon. And I felt like the Lord told me to sell it.
Okay.
And And I sold it. People didn't think I could sell it during a recession, and I got top dollar for it.
Nice.
And thank God for it. We still got one salon back in Smyrna.
That's don't be getting in real estate.
No.
Call me instead.
You know, well, we talked a little bit about that off the air. And I know, like you were saying, it's going to be hard to kind of keep me in the lanes, you know,
sure.
with things going on and stuff that I see. Because I'm pretty passionate about issues
yeah.
and stuff. But
so where are you from originally?
I was born and raised in Smyrna.
Okay.
And, a lot of folks in Smyrna that have been there that are native Smyrna, their fathers served in the Air Force Base, Seward Air Force Base.
Okay.
I was born out here at the base. And if
did your dad serve out
yeah,
there?
Yeah, my dad was okay. in World War II.
All right.
And he flew 24 bombing raids over Germany.
Oh, wow.
In a B-17. And I was told by a Smyrna councilman that my father was the meanest man in Smyrna. And he was mean. My dad was a hardliner. You know, you just didn't get out of line.
Sure.
You had to
go. Is that why you're a hard worker?
Well, I think some of that's played into it, but my dad was overbearing.
Right.
And I do think that guys like me that have had tough relationships with their dad.
Yeah.
I think that psychologically it affects us some.
Sure.
You know, my dad's one of them kind of guys you never could get approval from.
Okay.
You just had to work.
Yeah.
And no matter what you did, you can't get approved.
Good enough.
Yeah. It never was good enough. And I think that's why I care about these young men and young women that their dad's not in their lives.
Sure.
But, you know, fortunately, you know, I had a father in my life.
Yeah.
That was a hardliner. But I can remember going to visit him. They divorced when I was about two.
Okay.
And my dad was a real principled guy. You know, mm-hmm. it was just black or white. There was no middle ground. And life's not that way. People make mistakes. You know, people slip up, and my dad, he wasn't really a forgiving type guy, but he did help me. He helped me get started with my first car.
Okay.
The first car I sold was a 69 Camaro. Bought it when I was 15, and he did help me with my first vehicle. He said, I'm going to get your first vehicle, and I think he had $500 in it. He bartered for it. That's
right.
Wrote a book, learned
sure.
to barter.
Yeah.
That's probably where I get some of my car stuff and bartered from my dad.
Okay.
And I worked at the Omni Hunt.
All right.
You know, saving... Working for $1.50 an hour, saving money to paint that 69 Camaro, and I had the nice wheels and the nice paint job, and I sold that, and I done real good on it for, you know, 16 when I sold it, and I made $1,000. That was
wow.
a lot of money for a 16.
Sure, you're working for $1.50 an hour.
Back then.
Making $1,000 is big.
You know, but he was a hard liner, but you know what was cool? When you look at the father figure in society, we see that kind of diminishing. We see it diminishing. In Hollywood, and I think it's a big issue. And you know, I run a resolution this year trying to bring awareness
right.
to what I call the fatherless epidemic that mm-hmm. we see in our culture. And it does have ramifications to our society. But the neat thing is I had a stepdad that was a doctor of pharmacy, very okay. professional. He was a state investigator for the Board of Pharmacy for 25 years. Sadly, he passed last year. He would have turned 90.
Oh, wow.
And he did the investigative work on, I guess the guy's nickname was Dr. K. He's the one that overprescribed Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis Presley.
Wow.
So I didn't know that till later that someone told me that my stepfather was involved in that.
Huh.
But he also started the first Walgreens in 1955 at Green Hills. And I've heard his stories. In fact, I captured him on YouTube. If you typed in YouTube, Dr. William Chance, you'll see a man in a nursing home. That was my stepdad. So I got him to share some of his story. But the neat thing, you know, growing up, I used to think that was a handicap, my dad being so hard. And really, when you look back in life, and you don't really gain a lot of wisdom and insight till you get older, and then you look back, and what you thought was adversity really was an opportunity,
sure.
was really a blessing.
Something, right.
And I've seen that. Yeah, and my stepdad, he always would encourage me to get involved in Toastmasters,
mm-hmm.
to go to Dale Carnegie.
Oh, wow.
Now, my real father, he was the one teaching you how to work on a car.
Sure.
Powder,
sure.
wheel and deal. So I kind of had both elements.
Wow.
You know, really, it's a blessing.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. And especially now as you look back on it.
Oh, yeah. And that is it foot passion. You know, I've got a couple of young guys that I'm kind of, I guess you say, mentor now
mm-hmm.
that hopefully they're listening to me, you know. But I'm proud of that resolution. You know, if you look at, in fact, the young man made that video for me. He was a TSU student, just graduated TSU 2 months ago. He reached out to me, asked me for advice. Come to find out, he voted for Donald Trump. TSU student.
Okay.
He showed me. Well, he's in the paper with TSU. Yeah.
Okay.
He said, why I voted for Donald Trump.
Oh, wow.
And Marvin Williamson. Yeah, I'm real proud of him.
Yeah.
A young guy, but he's the one that helped me work on that video. If you go to YouTube,
okay,
type in fatherless epidemic.
I'll post that in the show notes.
Yes, and you'll see a picture of the state capitol.
Okay.
The two black lawmakers that speak up in there, they're the same black lawmakers that gave me a hard time about my history resolution.
Sure.
That talked about the first black lawmaker, Samson Keeble,
okay,
and talked about Nathan Bedford Forrest,
mm-hmm,
probably the most controversial figure in state politics. But the story is never told that Forrest ended up advocating for African Americans.
Right, right.
No, they end up censoring that.
Sure.
You know? But he, when I talked to him about history, he even told me that, you know, he's from Memphis. He even told me, he said, Rep, sometimes I think they don't want us to know these things, you know. And so, anyways, but, you know, here we are segueing off of other subjects.
Right, right.
I'm trying to stay focused.
No problem. No problem. So you mentioned earlier you bought your first house very young. How old were you?
22.
22.
22.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about the house? Is it still around?
Well, when I did, yeah, it's our business.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So you did very well.
Yeah, what I did, I had my red 68 Camaro, and I sold the 69. I always liked Camaros. My dad did buy that next one. He bought it and let me pay him back.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, I think he marked the car up. I think he did. I think he did. But he did note it to me.
Sure, sure.
So he had a little book. He had a little book. And I still had that book somewhere. And if my dad bought me, if he knew I needed a 10-millimeter deep well socket, he would find one.
Right.
And if it was a dollar, he'd put it in the book. And
I
had to pay him back every week.
Yeah, right.
I can remember when we were just married, times were so tough on us, you know, raising kids. I remember going to my dad, and I remember taking my watch and a watch that I had, and I said, Dad, will you loan me $20?
Wow.
For baby formula.
Right.
Because we didn't have the money.
Sure.
And we had to go buy the baby formula. And that only happened a few times, but when we were down, you know what I mean, just we did what we had to do to make ends meet.
Of course.
You know? But that house, you know, I set a goal that I was going to look at 20 homes. You know, I'm the customer that you don't want. You know what I mean? But I tell you what I did. I prayed about it. I said, Lord, give me direction on what I need to buy. And I said, one day this house will be zoned commercial. And I was just 22. You know, and there's a lot of Debbie Downers in this world. I face it in politics. You face it. We all face it. You know, don't let the Debbie Downers get you down. You know, and they were like, oh, nothing's going to happen over here. Nothing's going to happen. And now it's our business. We were over there just day before yesterday. I was cleaning the gutters. I was trimming the bushes yesterday. We do a lot of stuff ourselves. Had to fix the commode last week. And we've got about eight booths over there. I'm thinking about adding on, or I'd consider selling the right side of that lot.
Okay. You know what
I mean? But you know, right. I sold that red 68 Camaro to buy that property because I had to have $3,500, and that's what that car. Now, that car's probably worth $30,000 a day, but I sold it for $3,500. And I'm real proud of that business.
Yeah.
But you know, I had three brick and mortar businesses at one time. You know, I had some rental property on the county commission, on the planning committee, raising money for Rotary, doing the radio show with WGNS. And man, I was just doing too much.
Sure.
And I can remember Bob Spivey telling me at Rotary, and Bob was my mentor. And Mayor Spivey said, you need to back off, Mike. He said, you're just doing too much.
Yeah.
Now, Bob was a businessman. And what's kind of humorous about that, Bob didn't say go concentrate on your marriage, concentrate on your family. He said, concentrate on your business. You know, but that's why he was a multimillionaire and I'm not, you know.
Right, right.
But anyways, but my background's been, you know, business, on the salons and some real estate and the car business. And I do the radio show, Smart Issues, WGNS.
Sure.
Wrote a few books.
So when did you first run for office? Like what?
2002.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And now you're running for re-election.
Re-election.
Right. How long have you served in the state house?
I've been there seven, going on 8 years.
Okay.
Going on 8 years.
Why are you running again?
Well, I like what I'm doing. I feel like I'll hit on issues that most people will talk about.
Sure.
You know, and I think you would agree. You know, you're big on civil liberties and so am I.
Mm-hmm.
I just left my TV2 news class at MTSU. Broadcasting, journalism. I'd have never thought 5 years ago or 10 years ago that I was interested in journalism. But I'm going to tell you the reason I'm interested in journalism, because I see a lot of fake news.
I see
a lot of fake reporting.
Sure.
I see a lot of false narrative being preached that I think there needs to be another story told. And that's what I want to bring to the table, to tell that other story. But even my professor, he had told me, because it is an odd feeling when you're in there with these 20 and 24-year-olds. You know, but the good thing is, you know, they're like you. They're good at technology. They know how to use MacBook. They know how to do podcasts. And I'm learning from them. Now, I have the vision, I think, but I don't have the technical skills like they do. But I asked my instructor, and I was kidding him just now, because his wife came in. She teaches ethics in media.
Okay.
And she knows I'm curious about the unethical lack of ethics in media.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it, and she agrees. And I've asked him, I said, Dan Eschenfeld, a great guy. He was with, I think, a Jacksonville news affiliate down there in Seattle. News field, not Seattle, but St. Louis. And I asked him a while back, I said, Dan, who do you trust in the media? Who do you trust? And I thought he would, you know, pop off some national journalist from me. He said, I don't trust anyone. I said, you don't trust anyone in journalism? He says, I don't trust any of them. I was like, really?
Wow.
And
it's sad, right?
It is sad. You know, I do think that our locals do a pretty good job. Channel 5, Channel 2, I think 17, I think, does probably the best.
Right.
WGNS, I think, does a good job. The locals, you know, D&J, I mean, you know, they try.
Well, they're shorthanded now.
Well, they're very shorthanded. I feel sorry for them. Recently, I was with Trump at the rally, and I'm sitting there. I'm sitting behind Scott Golden, you know, the GOP chairman, and Trump points over to Scott Golden. It's kind of cool because I'm right behind him, you know, points over at us. And then he kind of calls out the media, and you know, he's like, oh, you know. And to be honest with you, I kind of felt a little sorry for the reporters because it's comical.
I've heard that, you know, at every Trump rally.
Oh, he does that.
People feel sorry for the
reporters. I kind of do because, you know, just think about it. They're doing their job.
Right.
Well, it's like I've had all of them hit me.
Sure.
I've had Sam Stocker, Nancy, Milan, Scott Brodin. But you know what? At the end of the day, I think them individually are fair. Now, I have seen the media personally. I think I do feel like they personally attacked me. I do. You know, I've got a young son that's given me trouble before. You know, that they just wore me out in the middle of a campaign. I mean, they put me on the front page 2 years ago when I mentioned Nashville was flying the gay pride flag. And then I mentioned that we get a mosque, but we turn down a Bible park. That's my opinion. I'm entitled to that under the First Amendment. They waited till the day of election.
To run the story.
To run the story.
I see.
Which really is a blessing. That's what I'm saying. Adversity is opportunity.
Sure.
Because as a Christian, I look back at Moses. I look at Gideon. I look at David in the Bible. I mean, if God can use David, he can use anybody.
Sure.
I mean, that guy was notorious. I mean, you can go back and study David.
You're right.
But he had courage and he had faith. And a lot of men could probably identify with David, especially, you know Christians. And but I don't harbor no bitterness against them. I mean, Sam called me the other day and I was glad he called. He called me about, and I'm proud of Sam talking about this. You know where
he's a good writer.
He's a great writer. He really is. Well, he was talking about the judge was saying that they shouldn't be taking the driver's licenses away. And I've been saying this for years. You know me, I fought the PCC situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm saying this is ridiculous that we're locking people up because they're behind on probation fees. And it's costing the taxpayers $24,000 a year. You know, you see me fight with
right.
the mayor.
Yep.
And it's lonely. I was on the front page of that, too.
Sure.
It's lonely. But, you know, I'm kind of an outlier politically. There's no doubt. And I stood with the Black Caucus 2 years ago when the kids got arrested.
Right.
Okay. Well, I stood with the Black Caucus because I believe in civil liberties. That, you know, Democrats don't have a monopoly on that. I mean, you know, the NAACP don't have a monopoly on that. Civil liberties, civil liberties.
Sure.
But just now, my instructor, He quoted Voltaire in a rough way. He just said, you know, I may disagree with what you have to say, but I'll give my life for you to have the right to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Constitution, civil liberties, the First Amendment, Second Amendment, we can go on and on, are vital to the democracy that we live in. But I'm going to tell you, when I see journalists, when they disagree with you and they try to bump you off, you know, that's I kind of have a problem with it. They can have their opinion. But I've seen them come against me, and it's really worked out in my favor. I mean, thank God for it. But one thing about Sam I want to compliment is that I was at a chamber event. You may have been there about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when I told Sam, I said, you know, Sam, I said, at the end of the day, all you do is cover the election commission. You just want to stir it up. It's the front page. At the end of the day, you touched not one life. You didn't lift up nobody. You didn't lift up the community. What did you do? I said, we've got a drug epidemic. Families are dealing with this. We've got an alcoholism epidemic, is what I'll say. DUI arrests were up 136% the past 5 years. In fact, I told that to a reporter. They left out the stat. Wouldn't the stat be important to, I mean, to the argument?
Thing, right.
Well, they left it out. They just said, oh, Sparks voted against them. I didn't think we need to be selling alcohol at MTSU stadiums.
Right.
You know, young minds, young people. If you want to drink, you know, you're 21.
Drink in the parking lot.
Yes. No, I don't think we need to be, I just don't think we need to be putting it out there.
I know.
But, you know, it was sad that they didn't quote my statistic.
Sure.
I mean, I just talked to a guy the other day.
I would think that some of the reason we have higher DUI levels is because we keep lowering the rate, like the blood level content.
Yeah, I mean, there's different factors. Yeah. I mean, now, is 7-day wine sales at grocery stores going to make a difference? I don't know. I don't know. But one thing that I want to do as someone who wants to be an effective change maker, and I think at the end of the day, that's what I want to be, an effective change maker. It's not being a Republican or a Democrat or a conservative or a liberal or a civil libertarian. At the end of the day, let's go by the Constitution. Let's enforce the laws that's on the books. Let's get out of the small business's way. Let's don't create more tax barriers and more regulations on small business like I'm seeing. That's happened.
Sure.
I've never voted for a tax increase. And the folks that are running against me now.
Even when you're on the county commission?
No, I never did. Never did.
Wow. That's,
I
mean,
I spoke
there
against
you
all
go,
that.
Right.
I spoke against all that. Now, I was an outsider on that. And
you're used to being an outsider.
I'm used to it. And, you know, it's lonely. I mean, seriously. I mean, it really is lonely because who do you identify with? You can't pick up the phone and call the Republican caucus majority leader. I mean, he might identify with you, but he don't know my district.
Right.
He don't know what I'm going through. He don't know the families I deal with.
That's true.
But when I go talk to people and I hear the hurts, mm-hmm. God told me the other day, he said, Mike, my wife just got diagnosed with cancer. He said, you know, my son that was having alcohol problems turned his life around.
Oh, wow.
I said, what's touched his life? He said, Mike, he got in this church. He said, this church started coming to the jail.
Wow.
And it made a difference in his life. He says, and I gave him my card. I said, have your it was a stepson, call me. I said, I want him to go touch 100 people's lives. Don't sure. just, because you got a healing and you're out of it, you go touch okay. some other people's lives.
Sure.
He said, oh, Mike, he's doing it. He's doing that. But, you know, Gabriel, you know how much it costs taxpayers for that program?
Nothing, I would get.
It costs nothing.
Yeah, right.
It costs nothing.
Sure.
And you think about it, how many people are out there talking about let's get the prison ministry in the jail, you know, let's go, you know, talk to these folks, let's go, you know, talk about alcoholism and what they can do, how to interview for a job skill, you know, how to start your own roofing company, your own plumbing business. I used to talk about that as a county commissioner,
mm-hmm.
and I would get the look, the deer in the headlight look from people. Seriously, this is common sense. Now this is what's sad. People are putting people in office many times that are clueless. I can promise you, people don't like me talking about these things. I can remember standing up on the county commission floor when they raised taxes, speaking against tax increase. I watched this county, and there's many people that are mad at me saying this right now. I watched this county spend $650,000 on tennis courts. You play tennis?
I grew up playing tennis, still play a little bit.
You might get offended, okay? Because
No. I was against that too. Okay. It took a lot of. I was running for county commission after that.
Think about this. $650,000 was spent on tennis courts, and we don't even own the property. $650,000 on tennis courts. We don't own the property. Now, they're going to say, well, we want to get TSSAA tournaments in here, da-da-da. They're going to make an argument. And that has some credible elements for that argument. Well, right down the street from my house are tennis courts with hackberry trees growing through them.
Sure.
That we own. The school system owns.
Right.
Plenty of parking. Nobody's there on Saturdays. What I was arguing is let's use this as a site and let's use our own county as a site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not go give Marfordsboro $650,000 to spend on tennis courts. I said, what do we spend on the jail over here? We spend on the jail. What if we just invested $25,000 in the jail for job skills, for a library, for maybe there's some TV
what
monitors.
What kind of return would that bring?
Yes.
Right, sure.
I mean, I'd say it's 100%.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you go invest 100% return?
Maybe.
I would do it. And then you're touching lives.
The opportunity cost, right? Is there something that's going to pay me $1,000?
Well, good point.
Then I'll leave
well,
it under.
Well, yes. And there, at that time, I mean, there really wasn't opportunity cost at that time.
Sure.
I mean, to me, investing in the jail, because that's one of your biggest budget, you know, line items is the jail.
Sure.
Okay. Why not? That's not being a bleeding heart. That's being a conservative. You know, invest in teaching someone how to fish, not give them a bunch of EBT cards. to go buy fish. Like I was behind a lady the other day at Food Line. $236 she'd buy herself, loaded down with groceries with an EBT card. You know, here I am, I'm using an EBT card. I'm looking shopping for deals.
Right.
You know, sure. Going through there. And I'm not, you know, hating on somebody because I don't know her situation. She might have five kids at home. I don't know her situation.
Sure.
But I see a society that's crumbling. And we got to push back
against. And there are people who take advantage of the system.
So there are. And there's some people
that make it harder for that mother you're talking
and there
about.
There are some people that need it. I got a guy now that's a locksmith. I called him the other day. He had a problem with a Lexus key. And he gets $18 a month.
Wow.
And he says, I said, well, you know, let's look into it. His wife in bad health. He's in bad health. And he gets $18. Now he's in his 70s, but you know, a lot of issues. But that's one thing I like about you, because I think what you could bring to the table is a fiscally conservative mentality, a cost savings approach, efficiencies, and you bring that civil libertarian aspect to you. It doesn't mean you're not for good schools. It doesn't mean you're not for parks or good infrastructure. It's just saying, you know, let's make sure what we're spending is wise,
right? You know, yeah. You know me well because we speak all the time. But let me ask you a question: mm-hmm. When or if you win this office again, do you have any plans? What you got? Anything on the like that you're cooking up right now? Anything?
You know, I mean, I'm probably the type of lawmaker. I think we have too many laws on the books now.
Okay,
let's enforce laws we got.
Can you remove some of them?
Yeah, that's what I was telling the mayor 2 years ago when I was on the front page. And we had a little battle, and nothing against the mayor. I mean, you know, I like the mayor. I think he's a good man. He's doing some good work over here with the prison ministry and 940, the workhouse. He's done some good things. He's
sure.
We got a good county.
You still disagree with a good
county. Yeah, and I did. Well, I'll tell you, hey, let me tell you, there's a lot of people in politics that don't like you disagree with them.
Well,
they don't, and they'll harbor bitterness against it. Me, you know, I got endorsed by a Democrat chairman that worked against me.
Yeah.
You know, people look at me like, what? He left the Democratic Party. He said left. And we're on the Michael Journal show.
Okay.
And he endorsed me live on the air on the Michael Journal radio show. But what it was, the reason that happened is because Ned Ray McCorder was one of my customers at my business.
Okay.
Ned Ray was the governor, was a Democrat governor. And I remember kidding him about being a Democrat. He said, son, I'm a Southern Democrat. There's a big difference. I don't think he liked what was going on with the Obama administration, some of that. But when the governor died, I just reached out to the Democrat chairman. I said, hey, man, use my parking pass. I got a parking space.
Sure.
At the time, I could like let somebody use my space. Now they've really cracked down because of, you know,
security concerns
and all. But you know, it's kind of weird. But, you know, it didn't cost me a thing. And all it was an act of kindness. Okay. Does that make me a bad Republican? I don't think so. I think it makes me a better statesman and a better person. And it cost me nothing. But me and that guy was more of a conservative than he was what you see today with the Democrat Party. Democrat Party today is, they're far left. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it.
There's a lot.
I mean, they're far. Probably the thing I'm the closest to right now is probably, here's a lady right now that's battling cancer. You know, Shannon Strong, I think she's a teacher at Smyrna.
Okay.
You know, cancer research is big. You know, I got a sister that's had a brain tumor.
Sure.
She had a brain tumor, or she does. And, you know, I'm big on that. But I think the Smyrna Laverne Food Bank, I think, is something I try to help with. We just had a big cornhole toss last year, and I appreciate it. We had a huge turnout. Sheriff was there, Leader Castro, Dr. Brian Terry, and several others, Lisa Crowell, Heather Dauber, several others that came out. And the Smyrna Laverne Food Bank, you know, I think you're touching the least of these. That's the people out there in your community, you know.
Sure.
But – man, I just see so much, Gabriel. I mean, the prison ministry is a big area that we should help. The Boys and Girls Club's doing a good job. That's impacting young men and women with
huge.
When they don't have fathers,
we don't know any. You know, it's hard to measure the difference they're making.
Well, just that one in Smyrna, you know, that's my stomping ground. Mm-hmm. I went to all those schools: Thumber Francis, Smyrna Middle, David Jury. You know, the little. Where the Boys and Girls Club is in Smyrna. There used to be a little gravel road back behind. I think it's still there. Well, I had these two African-American friends that I grew up with. They were about 10 when we met. But they were like dirt poor. I mean, dirt poor. They literally probably never had a bath in a month, would come to school. I can remember them being kind of shunned. Mm-hmm. I watched it, you know, as a young 10-year-old. The
world's changed a lot.
It has changed a lot. And we always played sports and football and baseball, and they were terrific athletes, man. They were just awesome athletes. And Herbert and Jerry Alexander was their names. And I remember they didn't even have a coat in the wintertime. And my mom, who's a strong Christian woman, she would go buy them a jacket, you know, get them coats. And they got taken away from their parents.
Oh, man.
And, you know, we talk about bootstraps. You know, pull yourself up by bootstraps. Hell, they never had a damn pair of bootstraps.
Gotta have boots and first, boots. Man. That's right.
And they got taken away and got put in intensive structural school. So, you know, they didn't have that positive male role model. I mean, I watched them get shunned in the neighborhood because back then, you know, I mean, neighbors would be looking, you know, if black, you know, black kids coming through the neighborhood, they're kind of looking. Remember, this is in the late 70s.
Right.
And we would go visit them at Tennessee Preparatory School. And one, you know, sadly went to prison. Another one stayed in touch with me. I hadn't seen him in a pretty good while. But, you know, they didn't have a chance. Mm-hmm. You know, I at least had a dad that was a hard guy. Who helped me get started in business.
Sure.
My stepdad, who encouraged me. Now, it was kind of funny. My stepdad, not really on his deathbed, but he knew he was dwindling down. He was talking to my little brother, was my half-brother, and real proud of him. And you know, he flies an aircraft for DEA, and he was number one agent at Quantico, and he graduated FBI, and real proud of him. And my stepdad looks at me. He says, he's talking about his will. He says, Mike, you're not in my will, he says, but you had a dad. Your dad left you a little something. And I was like, well, that's fine. You didn't leave me in your will.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't need nothing. Yeah. But he did teach me a lot. He encouraged me, which really meant.
Hard to put a value on.
Oh, you can't. It's priceless. Right. I mean, looking back in life, that is really priceless. Mm-hmm. You know, and you got some wisdom for how old
you? What a man to tell you that, too, rather than letting you be surprised at the.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? That's a man thing to do.
I'm cool with that, Bill. You never leave me anything. I mean, he left my mom good.
And sure.
He took care of my mom. He had no debt. And you know, everything was paid for. But what was cool, my stepdad, I was just over here at NHC. NHC, you know, the senior care.
Right.
And I seen what my stepdad was going through at the nursing home, assisted living facility in Lebanon. And nothing against Elmcroft. I mean, here I'm calling the name out. But a couple times I went in there, he's laying on the floor.
Wow.
Assisted living facility. He's laying on the floor. And I'm watching him wither away. I'm watching him. And, you know, we talked about, we had a good conversation, but he's withering away. He was 33 miles away from my house. I was trying to go see him. I could. But Representative White had just recognized NHC for a new, I think it was a new, either Parkinson's wing they had added on, or Alzheimer's ring or something.
Right.
And she called on me to say a few words, and I talked about my stepdad. You know, I said, literally, probably don't happen in a few hours, maybe a day left in his life. And I left there, went straight to Elmcroft with my wife, walked in. My stepdad was there. I mean, my stepsister, stepbrother was there. My mom was there. Walked in, probably the first time we'd all been together since maybe he went in there, or maybe we never had been together.
Wow.
My mom looked up my stepdad. She started hollering for him, and he took his last breath.
Wow.
So I was with him.
Yeah.
But, you know, then I'm seeing what my sister's dealing with mm-hmm. in the nursing home with four people in one room.
Wow.
And we're paying for that now, $200 a day.
Wow.
$200 a day we're paying for. Well, my mom is, technically.
Right.
And she's got Humana, and Humana's turned her down. Let me tell you, that's why I wrote that letter to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because we got to get a hold of this healthcare system somehow. And we got to get costs down. We got to find some efficiencies. Mm-hmm. $200 a day in a large, in a room, probably a third, about a half bigger than this office right here. And there's four people.
So you're close to each other.
Yeah. You know, she was a big encourager for me. My sister always would say, she would say, you know, your future is determined by the books you read and the people you meet.
Hmm.
And that's got a lot of truth. Yeah, she was a trailblazer. She's older than me. She graduated journalism at MTSU. And you know why she didn't want to go in journalism?
Why?
The dirty laundry. That's why she didn't want to do it, because she's got such a good heart. She was number one in sales with an insurance company back in the day. She had a cancer policy. She bought a cancer policy and wound up with cancer.
Wow.
And she had that brain tumor that cut it out when she was about 29, 30. And, you know, she done pretty decent, but her memory started fading. And then she got to where, you know, she wrecked her car last year. And, you know, the state took her driver's license away, which they needed to. And you know, it's hard to give up driving. So that's her independence.
Sure.
But then she failed. But she has woke up. I had said a little prayer here a while back. She was in there. She was on the trach. She was on the breathing machine, hooked up to all these tubes, feeding tubes. And it was pretty bad. I don't know if you've ever been through this.
No.
But it's pretty rough. And I remembered, you know, praying with my sister like I do every morning, my family. And my older sister was crying because we've got to do a conservatorship. We got to make decisions. And my older sister, who was a former nurse, she started crying. And that almost made my sister cry. I go next door because my mom lives next door. And I said a little prayer to my wife. And I just said, Lord, if you're not going to heal my sister, then just take her. Sure. And I hate to say a prayer like that. I mean, literally praying for my sister to pass away. I mean, I'm that's not something I really want to pray about. But I also don't want to see her hooked up feeding tubes and brain damage.
Right.
And I had my truck loaded up with recyclables because some Republicans recycle like I do. And I also had some of the trash. And I loaded up, and my wife came running out with the phone. Remember, my sister was unconscious.
Right.
Hadn't opened her eyes in about two or three months. And she came out. She said, Vicky, just open her eyes.
Wow.
And she said the word what and the word no. So my prayers were answered. She's slowly doing better. But I'm going to tell you, man, the good thing about this, the blessing, though, because in every bad situation, there's some kind of gold nugget of opportunity or blessing. And you got to reach down and pick it up and see it and grab it. And I'm learning. I'm seeing what these folks are dealing with. Like Miss Woods, she's next. She's right there by my sister. She's an African-American lady. She's blind. I'm checking on her. Another lady, Mary, she's slowing down. Another lady that's, I guess she's from Thailand. And I have this theory, because she keeps playing this Thai music in these videos. I got this theory that my sister's going to come to really good and know Thailand. No Thai,
because
that's all she's playing. And you hear this music. And my sister hadn't complained, but she's literally just, you know, 15 feet from her with TV on, listening to all this Thai music and song and dance. And I mean, you know, but I'll tell you what was neat. And because this is what's kind of cool. I took care of my mom over yesterday, Gabriel. And mom's in the walker. And we walk in with mom. And I'm trying to watch, make sure she don't fall. And she sits with her. And my mom, like, she would sing in the choir. My mom's very spiritual. Even though we grew up Catholic, my mom's very, like, Pentecostal.
Okay.
Kind of lady, and she would pray over everything. And my mom's over, and she starts singing to my sister. Remember, my sister don't even know my name half the time.
Right.
Don't even know my family members' names. And my mom would get to a verse, and she would, I think she, it was something about that, you know, Lord, you're my healer.
Uh-huh.
And she said, my mom forgot the words. My sister picked up on it and started singing the words, man.
That's
and
awesome.
Started filling in the void.
Right.
And I thought, wow, how the mind. My sister couldn't remember names, but all of a sudden she's remembered songs.
Wow.
And I'm like, the human mind is fascinating. So maybe that's how she's learning. Mm-hmm. You know, the other day I was doing the radio show and I was talking about, you know, healthcare, and I want to tie it into my sister. So I went to see my sister that morning. And my sister had complained to the nurse, and she said something like, I couldn't understand. She says, she was like, mumbling, my butt hurts. Like, and I'm like, what? And she said, and finally she says, B-U-T, my butt hurts. Like that. And, you know, here she at least tried to spell the word butt.
Right.
And you had to find the humor in it. Cause if you don't find the humor, you know, you would probably break down and cry.
Wear you down, right?
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of families are dealing with the Alzheimer's and the Parkinson's and cancer. So for me, as a lawmaker, as an effective change maker, you know, I get very passionate. And I was going to call Humana out on the House floor about 2.5 months ago. And I went to the speaker. And, you know, I mean, I can get fired up, but I don't – you know, you got to be effective, and you could lose your effectiveness if you're not careful.
That's right.
Okay. So I went to speak. What do you think, Speaker? I said, I'm seeing this with my sister. You knocked on my sister's door. My sister always liked you. And she said, Mike, this is happening with a lot of companies. It's not just Humana. It's a lot of others. But, you know, to answer your question, I mean, I'm passionate about what's going on with my sister.
Yeah.
I don't like to see people screwed over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my background's in the car business. having the salon, real estate. I never hurt anybody. I mean, I've got 100% positive feedback on eBay. You know, I've treated people right. I've got people that have bought five cars. Dave Ramsey shot me. Dan Miller, his best friends, bought 11 cars from me. 48days.com, 40 Days of Work You Love. I'm in his book. I've treated people good. But I never committed no fraud where you're trying to hurt somebody. To me, when you're paying your insurance premiums and this company, see, this is what's interesting. I want your viewers to know this. When my sister was on the trach, you know, hooked up on the breathing machine, Humana told the hospital, we're not going to pay for skilled nursing because she's not going to get any better. Think about this. Okay, that was their excuse. Okay, she wasn't getting better. All of a sudden, she gets better, and then they don't want to cover her. They told me on the phone that she had 100 days of skilled nursing.
Okay,
and they still turn it down. Now they got us jumping through all these hoops.
Sure.
But you know what? And this is what I think I'll bring to the table. Because one of your viewers is going to deal with what I'm dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have that passion to go fight an insurance company.
Sure.
You know, do you think a guy that sells insurance is really going to fight an insurance company like my opponent? I don't think so. I mean, my record is a proven fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you're the governor. I'm speaking against the governor. I'm against this JLL contract right now. Just search Nashville Post, Mike Sparks, JLL, and I'm all about the private sector, but I mean, you got to save money.
Right.
Prove how you save money. They haven't proved that they're saving money with all this privatization because it's going to Chicago.
I see.
Now, if it's staying in Tennessee, you know, because you know, you look at the macroeconomic scheme of things, you know, a rising tide lifts up all boats. I mean, if you go do a real estate,
if the money stays in the economy.
Yeah, but you send it to investors that live in Manhattan or San Francisco or Portland, Oregon, how does that benefit the residents of my community?
Tough to justify, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Let me ask you another question real quick. Let's see. I've got like four questions I want to ask. Who's your political hero other than Ronald Reagan? Because everybody always wants to say Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, you got that.
But I know you. I mean, if I was going to get somebody, I bet it's William Wilberforce.
Yeah. Have you cycled?
I know you well. So,
but how many of your viewers don't even know who that guy is?
Probably they'll be Google it now, right?
William Wilberforce. How do you know that?
I've heard you speak about him before, and how he had vision and mission for the people, and he was a fighter, and so that's who.
But if you go study Wilberforce. He was effective change maker, but he finally freed the slaves. Wilberforce freed the slaves of Great Britain.
That's right.
And that's where I know the Lord.
He purchased their freedom.
Yeah, this is why I know the Lord's put this on my heart. Because you know about MTSU,
mm-hmm.
Forest Hall. You know, I was the one that spoke. And I want to compliment Rob Mitchell did speak too. Well, the media left my comments out. I mean, they never even reported my comments. Because Rob's was truthful too. But I started pointing out, I asked the kids, I said, do you mind getting into this? Is this okay?
I mean,
here's a little bit of a political hero was Samson Keeble. Samson Keeble, who was the first black lawmaker in the state of Tennessee. He was a Republican and a Confederate soldier.
Wow.
Talk about a trailblazer. Could you imagine being the first African-American lawmaker in the Tennessee General Assembly? He just lost the Civil War. I mean, sitting there, the media treated him bad, by the way. Go study history, and you'll see how the media kind of made fun of him, said he looked out of place. Well, wow. I'm sure he did look out of place.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But that guy had positive male role models in his life.
Okay.
The Keeble family and others, they run the newspaper up here. You know, he was what you call a press boy, they called it, you know?
Okay.
So he apparently worked in the printing industry.
I see.
Well, he had positive mentors that encouraged him. Then he ran for office. Now, he couldn't get elected to Rutherford County. He moved to Davidson County. This is where I told those students, how many of y'all know? Remember, these are about 100 African-American students that are graduating college.
Sure.
They don't know the history. Didn't know. Remember, they're all fighting about Nathan Bedford Forrest. They didn't know who Samson Keeble was.
Right.
Then I asked them who John Newton was. You know who John Newton was. John Newton's the one that wrote Amazing Grace.
Okay.
John Newton was sold into slavery. John Newton had a rough story. John Newton, they said, was such a bad guy He cussed so bad that sailors didn't want to be around him. I mean, this guy was a rough character, but the Lord touched his heart. And I think he's kind of one of those situations where he just hit rock bottom. And he was like, Lord, if you'll just turn my life around, you just lift me up out of this pit, I'll serve you.
Sure.
And then what he did, he ended up, you know, seeing the slave trade because he was a slave ship captain. Then he influenced, he became a minister, but he didn't really fit into the conventional ministry. Just like St. Patrick. St. Patrick was a rebellious priest, and he was sold into slavery. A lot of people know the history of St. Right. Patrick, but not to get off on that tangent, but to stay focused on William Wilberforce, he influenced William Wilberforce. William Wilberforce fought for years to end slavery, and they said finally on William Wilberforce's deathbed is when they freed the slaves. But, you know, he fought and he fought and he fought. But I think for me, I've learned it doesn't happen in my time. It's like this PCC situation. It didn't happen in my time, but it got done.
Sure.
You know, the jail reforms, I heard Sheriff Fitzhugh, and I got to, you know, tell me how weird this is. All right. I'm kind of a proponent of the CBD oil. I'm opened up on medical marijuana. I'm keeping open mind.
Okay.
But my stepdad, who is a state investigator, said, you know, he remembers dispensing medical marijuana.
Sure.
Years ago.
Right, before it was.
I was like, I didn't know that. Right. He said, Mike, I think there could be some potential positive uses. If you're in hospice as a lawmaker, why should I tell you medical marijuana is bad for you and you're in hospice? You got 3 months to live. That's a
sure.
oxymoron right there if there ever is right. one. So I see my stepdad. I see the people. Listen to the community. I'm listening to law enforcement. I'm listening to pharmacists.
Mm-hmm.
I called a pharmacist here in Smyrna. I won't say what chain. Well, I said it earlier. I shouldn't say which one. You people don't know what I'm talking about. I called this. It was a female. I said, what do you think about medical marijuana? I was just calling people.
Right.
She said, you need to legalize marijuana. I was like, what? And she was a pharmacist. She said, look, it's already out there. People are going to get it. She said, the opioid crisis is far worse. Alcoholism is far worse. I was shocked.
Wow.
I called a detective.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say where. I called a detective. Okay. And he's a friend of mine. I called him. And I said, what do you think? You need to legalize it. Law enforcement. I mean, okay. Detective.
Right.
I mean, legalizing. Right. Now, I'm not for legalization. I'm not for that. But I'm saying I'm keeping an open mind on these issues. But I think next year, I think, you know, just I don't know how you go invent a law to encourage positive male role models to be involved in kids' lives. I don't know how you really invent more laws to turn people around. But the point I want to make is, I had Dr. Brian Terry talk about CBD oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, talk about what he's, you know, his legislation. Right before that, I mean, right, he talked, and then I had Sheriff Fitzhugh speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of our jail over here and New Vision Church and others that are involved. Franklin Road, Beller Baptist, some of the things that they're doing to turn around people facing opioid addiction and alcoholism. And it was just kind of strange because here the sheriff speaks right after, and here we had this, you know, little ordeal with CBD oil and all that.
Sure. Sure.
Early this year. And, but, you know, the sheriff, you know, they are having reforms out there. They're doing great things. Brother John Spurgeon out there.
Do you see something happen in the state soon?
Oh, we had the Fresh Start Act. When Sam Stockard called me, I brought up the Fresh Start Act,
okay.
and in fact, I gave him an attorney's name who's big on helping Steve Waldron. I don't think he'd mind me sharing this, and I gave him Steve Waldron. That's here called. I'm kind of giving him hooks or angles for the story,
right?
And Sam was like, yeah. And in fact, I was telling somebody because I did get mad at Sam when he wouldn't cover that issue about the opioid crisis, and then you know. 4 days later, and I hope I mentioned this earlier, he said, I called him to the mat, mm-hmm. and he started covering the opioid crisis. And he did cover it, but at the time I'm talking about it, literally no one was talking about it back 10 years ago,
right,
12 years
right.
ago.
It's been going on for a while.
It has, and one thing, and it's not like I'm bragging, but I was the first elected official to talk about these things, and I took my opponent to lunch. People thought I was crazy taking Kent Coleman to lunch because this guy just beat. You know, he was a very wealthy guy. I would say easily net worth of a million. I would say he treated me good, mm-hmm. treated my kids good. My kids.
He bought lunch. You bought lunch.
Well, I bought lunch. I did buy lunch. I said
you did invite him out.
I did. I invited him. And what was kind of sad with Kent? he's taking all the medicine.
Sure.
Because he was battling cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. And sadly, he passed 2 years ago. My understanding, he was the longest survivor of cystic fibrosis. But, you know, I literally had a couple people that made fun of me for taking my opponent to lunch. Mm-hmm. They thought that was crazy. I think it's brilliant. Yeah. I was like, hey, he was a brilliant lawmaker.
Right.
Vanderbilt Law Grant.
Sure.
You know, he knew more about law than I did.
Right.
And I said, Kent, I said, how come nobody cares about the drug problem? He says, Mike, if somebody has never been touched by the drug problem and alcoholism, they probably don't care. He says, Mike, get on the health committee. That way you can be an effective change maker. Then he goes on to start telling me how to win my next race.
Wow.
My opponent teaches me how to win.
That's awesome.
And I'm not going to go into the details he told me. I'll tell you off camera, and you'd like it. I don't want people to misconstrue what I'm saying.
Right.
I named a bridge after him in Smyrna. We haven't done the ceremony yet. I just, you know, see, people will hate on me for naming a bridge after my opponent. Believe it or not, people will get mad that I named a bridge after my opponent. Like some people, I'm not going to call their names. They got mad because I named a bridge after Paul Johns, because I named a bridge after Captain Jeff Koos.
Right.
And I tell you, it's egos, folks. We got to let the egos get out of the way and just get into being a public servant.
Sure.
And serving the best interest of people. Don't, Calvin Coolidge said, a man get more done if he doesn't mind who gets the credit for it. And I think Reagan had a version of that too. But my political hero would probably be what you said, William Wilberforce, Reagan naturally, but even Abraham Lincoln, but you get into people that had passion and conviction. I mean, look at Nathan Bedford Forrest. You're like, oh my God, Forrest. But Forrest, he freed civilians that were going to be executed. He ended up advocating for African Americans. It's all historically documented. 3,000 blacks at his own funeral.
Wow.
I spoke at MTSU. Nobody knew anything. They never printed this. They never printed my comments. But the main protester there came up to me, Brandon Woodruff, and he wanted to know more about William Wilberforce.
Wow.
He said, you think I can intern with you? Remember, he's the main protester. I'm like the far right. He's the far left. And we've kind of become close. He's running for office in Chattanooga now. As a state rep.
That's Brandon awesome. Woodruff.
Yeah, he's probably more, well, he's very passionate. He's just 25. He's got two master's degrees. And he's a sharp guy. And I said, I think he'll be effective, but he's effective because he's got discernment and some wisdom. I mean, who would come up and start asking me questions but a man that's smart?
Sure.
Or like Marvin, that's helping me just graduate TSU. I think he's going to go to law school, and I'm hoping he's the first one to be admitted to this. Hopefully, we'll go get this new law school at TSU.
That'd be awesome.
He was one in the paper today.
Okay.
Because when Scott Broden called me, I said, here, get call Marvin. Talk to this guy. Right. He happened to be sitting with me. But mentors and heroes.
You do a great job of that. Passing it around.
Well, but you know what? I mean, people tell me that, but you know what? You always got somebody hating on you. But, I mean, you do. I mean, other day, my opponent, they're trying to hate on me. My per diems. I get $63 to go to Nashville for the week. I mean, I go once a week, I get $63.
Right.
I'm one of the lowest paid legislators in Nashville. But they'll hate. But they're not going to tell you that they just voted for their own pay raise.
Sure.
It's not the media that covers.
Right.
And if folks don't believe me, go pull up the website, Town of Smyrna. The video links are disappeared. The mayor will get a 300% pay increase.
Wow.
How come the media didn't talk about that?
There's not much media left.
But you know what? This is what I see the hypocrisy in the media. Okay. When last year I spent $130 out of my campaign account for education, $130. Okay. Like I just got two books. I rented them. I could have paid for it out of my campaign account because I'm learning to be able to take that and take tissues. I just paid cash for it. They literally tried to smear me because I spent $130 for education. I mean, I get one state trip a year, one trip. The town council just went to Las Vegas. Is that in the paper? It ain't in the paper. Laverne Council went to Vegas. Is that in the paper? No. And I'm not hating on them if they want to go to a convention, but I mean they're gonna hate on me. I spent time with my wife. I go to the conference. It's at Hard Rock. I don't gamble and I don't drink. So I stayed in a different location with my wife. And they want to, look at Sparks. I'm telling you, I've seen the fake news. They tried to paint me as a bigot. They ain't going to tell me, Mike's doing with the Black Caucus. Did that make news? Didn't make news. The only Republican to ever stand with the Black Caucus. Don't make news. I'm on the African-American calendar for 2018. I hung out with the African American Heritage Society, and it was where I got confirmation. Is we walked up and they started singing Amazing Grace. And that's where Dr. George Smith, and folks, if they'll Google Dr. George Smith, Mike Sparks, they'll see the column. Sadly, George Smith just passed away. He's an African American trailblazer.
I'm going to have a lot of work to do to get all these points.
Yeah,
it's hard. So let me, I got two real quick questions. It's going to get off of politics a little bit. What do you do for fun?
Man. Well, you know, I mean, I like to learn. I like to learn. You know, I mean, I've got a motorcycle, but I hadn't had a chance to ride. I bartered for it last year. I got a nice Kawasaki Vulcan. It's dressed out. I hadn't had a chance to ride it. I mean, I like the bike. But, you know, man, I see a lot of deaths out there. You know, a lot of people get killed. And
it's dangerous.
I got a wife and two kids. And, you know, I mean, you know, like I say, I mean, I hang out with my wife. I've got a good marriage. Give God a glory for married 29 years. And she's kind of my rock.
Sure.
And, you know, and this is what kind of pisses me off in politics. When your enemies, when these people, I mean, think about this. I want your viewers to know this. My opponent just told me 2 years ago, Mike, you should have went into ministry because you got a real heart for the people. You got a heart for people. Now all of a sudden they're slamming me. Well, it hurts my wife. When they hurt my wife, they hurt me.
Sure.
And when they talk about my family members, it hurts me. Okay. But you know what? That's politics. And what I want your viewers to do, you challenge the people that are running for office. Run on your record, brother. Run on your record.
Yeah.
Don't go create fake news. Don't have to smear candidates. Don't have to talk about their family. You run on your record of raising taxes, of wanting us to vote for a gas tax, of raising your own pay, or raising an impact fee where homes are not, they're unaffordable now.
Right.
You know, I run a resolution on, I got the Hero of Housing Award from the home builders just last month.
Wow.
I haven't done a press release or anything. Like I said, I've never voted for a tax increase. But, you know, challenge your elected officials. What have you done for me lately? What have you done for me in the past? My opponent's been there 10 years. I've been in my position going on 8 years. You know, I'm talking about term limits. You know, especially at the federal level, I don't think that people need to be serving on 20 years. You know, but I see a lot of fake news. I'll put my record up against anybody, and I'll debate. And well, you were with me.
Sure.
Remember what was cool? The school board was trying to hate on us, or hate on me.
Sure.
So you invited me in this
shark-infested water.
Wasn't that masterful? Well, what happened? I had an event about term limits, of U.S. term limits. I had some people in the community. Well, I already had the event scheduled. I had Chris Devaney coming in, and I had a guy from Florida flew up, and I already had it scheduled. They already had the flight, the hotel, everything booked. But all of a sudden, they want to set up legal women voters. Well, legal women voters is an arm of the Democrats. Let's face it, folks. They're not conservative. I know they're not. Well, they had it all set up. You know, it's going to be interviewed. And it was a setup. I know what they do. Okay. But I already had that event scheduled for U.S. term limits. Well, the newspaper put us on the paper, set us up. I think it was me and Don White and Brian Terry, Tim Rudd. They showed our little, you know, the nameplates.
Right.
And the empty seats. You know, they tried to hit us. I think put us on the front page. Tried to hit us. Well, I already had my event scheduled, you know. So I just emailed, or I wrote and emailed both school boards. I said, I'm willing to debate you live on WGS radio. And WGS, they're down with it. And they believe in the First Amendment. They're great folks. And I love what Bart, Scott, and all they do over there, and Brian. And
it's a real treasure of our community.
And so somebody, I said, well, you know, is there anybody that could just be my ride shotgun with me? Could be my Aaron. Moses had an Aaron, you know. Gideon had somebody. David had somebody. And two or three people said, Gabriel Fancher. I was like, yeah. And remember my opponent. He was against school choice, but he homeschooled his kids. He had a choice, but he won't deny it to everybody else. I'm all about homeschool. You want to homeschool? More power to you. You want to put your kid in private school? More power to you. A lot of folks can't afford to homeschool.
Right.
Because it goes back to that fatherless. They don't have that.
Parent, you got to know afford
income.
That's right.
Yes. And remember what you said? They were talking about these for-profit companies. And what did you say?
I asked him why he was against profit.
Yeah, what's up with profit? And then they asked me something about, why do you care about Memphis? I do care about Memphis. I care about the inner city. I care about Mountain City.
We're affected by all those things.
We are.
Right? Those people grow up there and they move here.
Man, what was so cool is I had a lady that's real big on school choice and the charter schools and just outside the box. I think she's an African-American She's in a PBS documentary. I forgot the lady's name, but if you type in,
she's the lady that called
in. Yeah. She happened to be listed.
Let them have.
Oh man, it was so cool. I mean, it had to be a God thing because her daughter's in MTSU, and somehow she was listening to the show. And I said, I have to care about Memphis. I do care about Memphis. I've been to Memphis. I've been down there towards some schools. Yeah, I listen to the Memphis lawmakers. I kind of feel sorry for what they got to deal with. We're blessed up here. They're not.
It's a different story.
And she called them, man, and she rang them. Oh, by the way, who do you think won that debate? Who do you think won the debate?
I'd like to think we did.
Well, it's four of them against two of us.
Exactly.
Well, really, it should have been 14, but the others never showed up.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Here they're trying to hate on me, and they were like, hey, come on up, let's debate. And I'll say that today. I'll debate anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Gauntlet's been thrown.
Let's just
down.
Do it. I mean, you know, they run on their record. I run on my record. And that's the way it should be.
Sure.
It shouldn't be who's got the fanciest commercials, who has to slander this guy and make fun of one of their family members that's had some problems. And that's happened, by the way.
Oh, wow.
That's happened. And I could call their names out. I'm not going to do it. You know, one thing that Jesus talked about that's difficult as a Christian, it's one of the most challenging aspects of being a Christian, is forgiveness.
Oh, yeah, it's the scandal of grace, man.
It's really difficult, but really it's really the basis of being a Christian. You have to forgive, and I do forgive. I see him on Facebook trying to give me a hard time and this and that. You know, people ask, are you going to respond? I said, I just give it time.
Sure.
The Lord will fight my battles.
And
I call on him to fight my battles. Just like David, none of these people would fight back in the day, and God used David.
Sure.
He wasn't the most articulate, most educated. He didn't fit in with the country club crowd. You know, remember what you told me years ago? What'd you tell me? Let your viewers know.
Let's see. That you're probably talking about the time I told you that I can't remember what you're voting
remember,
on.
Remember, I run a deal.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's when they were giving the raises to all the executives.
Yeah. I had a bill, and I'll challenge any of your listeners. I found the most savings of any freshman lawmaker in the state of Tennessee in the history. But House Bill 1968, but it froze. It was $2.6 million for the savings the first year, about almost $30 million savings over a 10-year period. I was surprised when Fiscal Review ran the numbers. My bill, when I was a county commissioner, I watched top officials get a big, like, $10,000
sure,
pay raise.
And that was your thing.
And they
the
would
top
blame
officials
it.
Were getting raises.
Yeah, the top
the
officials would be getting $10,000 pay raises. And I remember they would say, oh, it's the state. It's the state. They blame it on the state.
Always.
Okay, so what I did, I thought, you know what? I'm the state now. I'm going to change this. I started doing some investigating. Started listening around. Started talking to some attorneys about draft legislation. Well, my own party would support it. My bill froze the mayor, the sheriff, the property assessor, the trustee, all the top officials' pay raises. I mean, the director of elections, and it's no disrespect, Alan Farley was not in that position at that
sure.
time. The position was vacant now. Think about this. The position was empty. That position automatically got a pay raise. And you had 75 people, applicants wanting that job. I mean, a good businessman would say, you know what, let's relook at this. Can we get somebody qualified for $55,000?
You're right.
Can we take that other 20 grand and go put it in solid waste? Can we go put it over here at the guys that use an outhouse for a bathroom? You go give them guys a $100 bonus, that money is immediately spent in this community.
Sure.
But you know what? You know what's sad about that? All those folks had lobbyists. Lobbyists came to me fighting me.
Wow.
I was shocked, Gabriel. That's what hit me over the head and said, government really isn't for the people sometimes. They're not. And all those lobbyists come to me. And I remember one of them said, and I was, 7 years younger. He said, young man, you're fixing to undo what it took us 6 years to get accomplished up here. What they did, they bypassed the Democrat process at the county commission.
Mm-hmm.
The county commission should have had that authority to make that decision. So what they said, they won't take the politics out of it. No, let it be transparency. Let the county commission vote if this person needs a raise, if they don't need a raise. And it's a mandate. They force that mandate. Think about this. They pass a law, which is a mandate, forcing the locals to give those raises. That's
and
a mandate.
Forcing a future property tax.
Yes. Well, this thing about it. This is the hypocrisy. All these people that talk about mandates, they never talk about that mandate. I run the bill. I had no support. My own party said, it's going to hurt you politically. I said, brother, it ain't going to hurt me politically. One person gave me encouragement. That was Beth Harwell. She said, Mike, you got truth on your side. And I run the bill. We've got a video we're trying to make of it now. And the guy, people said I called Curry Todd, the chairman of a hypocrite. You know, in the committee, it's supposed to be hypocritical. Well, ironically, Curry got arrested for violating his own bill 2 months later. He had a bill that said you can carry your gun if you're in Hooters, but you can't drink.
Right.
He was in Hooters, drinking Hooters and drinking,
right,
and got arrested. Yeah. But that bill, say $2.6 million, all those people had lobbyists.
Off the bat.
Yes.
It's a mandate. Countless amount.
It's later, a mandate. Right. But what it is, it's tied to the population growth. Mm-hmm. But this is the thing about it. The growth, you know, we're all working harder. Substitute teachers are working harder. Teachers are working harder. The guys at Dump are working harder. The clerk at McDonald's is working harder. Dealing with growth.
Right.
They, you know, I'm just saying that you're better off, in my opinion, instead of giving these school superintendents a $25,000 pay raise, like I've seen in this county. I literally watched our school superintendent, not Don Odom. Don was my principal back in the day. I watched our school superintendent get a $25,000 pay raise, and we were going to lay off county employees. I was the only one to talk about it. It is lonely. It is lonely. That's the disconnect. Remember this word, disconnect. That's what goes on. There's a blatant disconnect. My logic is, you take that $25,000, the guy that's at the bare minimum, you give him a bonus, a tied incentive. If he's doing a good job, you put the carrot and stick approach, you know, he's going to get a bonus if he maybe it's a great idea of how we encourage recycling, or we reduce recidivism, or we reduce truancy in the school system. You have ideas, you incentivize them, okay? That's what I was talking about in my letter to Donald Trump. I was talking about private sector solutions, getting the universities involved, and just brainstorm some of these ideas. But you give them that little $100 bonus or that little
– which is a big deal to a guy making minimum wage $10.
I mean, it is. And, you know, and that's not a bleeding heart issue. That's a conservative issue.
I think it makes sense. Yeah, I mean, you know that.
It does make sense. Well, I mean, I appreciate you. I forgot all about that that you knew about. But what you said, this is what was funny. When about that bill, you made a point. You said, Mike, you're not going to get invited to many country club events.
And you haven't, have you?
No, I don't. But you know what? Anybody listening right here, the food at the country club is terrible. I mean, seriously.
You talking about Stones River?
All the country clubs, the food is usually
I don't know, man.
Let me tell you. My wife can outcook anything.
I have no doubt.
Take pinto beans and gravy and fried squash any day of the week to pair them long green
that
beans.
That floppy chicken and the green beans. You're right.
Anyways, yeah.
Last question about food. What's your favorite restaurant?
Omni Hut.
Omni Hut. All right.
My first job at 13 years old.
Opens back up soon, right?
Yeah, they're open for lunch. Go see them. You know what? The first person that will respond to you, the first two people that respond to you, I'll buy them lunch. I'll give them gift cards.
All right. Comment in there. Let Mike know. He'll take them. Yeah. Can I come along?
I'll buy my own. But anyways, I got Major Walls that started with my mentor.
Okay.
I got named the road after him about 3 miles. Major Walls really instilled a lot. He was in the Pacific. He was at Pearl Harbor when he was bombed.
Wow.
So I had two military guys that kind of drilled, lack of better, you know, better term, that that just drilled this stuff in me. But he was outside the box. Okay. But that's where, you know, 13 years of age.
Sure.
There. But he was a great guy. Great restaurant.
Thank you for coming on, Mike. I appreciate you taking time. I know we've wandered a lot here, man, but I really feel like
it's folks like you that bring awareness to things. And if folks need me, call me on my cell, 525-3198. I've been told I'm the only elected official that will give out their cell number. I've given out the Mike Journal Show, WGS. 525-3198. And even if
Shane Reeves gave his out on my show too. Yeah.
Well, I like Shane. Yeah. Shane just texted me this morning. Yeah, Shane's son, my professor at MTSU, he's a tennis court coach.
Okay.
They say Shane's son is one of the top three tennis players in the state.
Excellent player. Yeah.
Have you watched him play?
No, but Shane told me that he beat him, that his son beat him at tennis many years ago. So.
Oh man! I hear he's going to be a rock star. But if folks need me, even if you disagree with me, call me, and I promise you I'll always be there to listen, okay?
Hey, I think JR said count me in.
All right.
Do you know JR Eastman?
Yeah, I know JR. How's it going, JR?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll end this. Thanks again, Mike.
Thank you.